Good morning. Dr. Marin and I really appreciate the opportunity to provide you with this update about measles, mumps, rubella, and varicella vaccine safety, as well as the recommendations for MMRV. During this presentation, we will briefly review the risk for fever and febrile seizures after MMRV vaccine. Then Dr. Marin will describe the MMRV recommendations and the framework used for the development of these recommendations. And we will provide you with some additional resources. So let's begin with a review of the MMRV vaccine. The Food and Drug Administration licensed combined measles, mumps, rubella, and varicella live vaccine, or MMRV, with the brand name ProQuad, for use in children aged 12 months to 12 years in 2005. Shortly after, in 2006, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices recommended use of MMRV vaccine for children in this age group. The MMRV vaccine was preferred over separate administration of MMR and varicella vaccines as part of the ACIP general preference for combination vaccines. Pre-licensure study data from children aged 12 to 23 months who received dose 1 MMRV or MMR and varicella vaccines at the same visit are shown in this slide. These data represent adverse events that happened in the 6 weeks after vaccination. There were two systemic adverse events which were more likely to occur after MMRV vaccine than after the comparison group, which we're going to refer to in this talk as the MMR plus V group. And that was fever and measles-like rash. For fever, 21.5% of the MMRV recipients had fever after vaccination, compared with 14.9% of the MMR plus V. And this fever tended to cluster in the 5 to 12 days after vaccination in both groups. Because of the finding of increased fever after MMRV, there was concern about the potential increased risk for febrile seizures to occur more commonly after MMRV vaccine compared with the MMR and varicella vaccines. So let's take a moment and review some information about febrile seizures. Febrile seizures are defined as seizures that occur in febrile children who do not have an intracranial infection, such as meningitis, or a metabolic disturbance, or a history of afebrile seizures. They usually occur at ages 6 to 60 months, and the peak age for febrile seizures is 14 to 18 months, which you will note is overlaps with the age at which the first dose of MMR and varicella vaccines are recommended. Febrile seizures affect about 2 to 5% of young children in the United States, and although they can be very frightening to parents, they generally have an excellent prognosis. More than 90% of children who have a febrile seizure will not develop epilepsy. The risk of developing epilepsy depends on many factors, including genetic predisposition. About one-third of children with a first febrile seizure will go on to have a recurrent febrile seizure in their early childhood. So what causes febrile seizures? Well, we think that it's an age-related increased susceptibility to seizures brought on by fever. Of interest, the peak temperature has been shown in studies to be a major determining factor of febrile seizures. And certain infections are known to be more associated with febrile seizures than others, and these include roseola, salmonella, and shigella. Febrile seizures have been transiently associated with two vaccines, the whole cell pertussis vaccine and the MMR vaccine. So because of this concern about febrile seizure risk after MMRV vaccine, two post-licensure studies were conducted to assess for risk of febrile seizures after the MMRV vaccine. One study was conducted in the Vaccine Safety Data Link, which is a collaboration between CDC and 8 managed care organizations. A second study was conducted in a managed care organization, and this was sponsored by Merck. Preliminary data from these studies were presented to the ACIP, or Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, in 2008. And this information from both of these studies suggested an increased risk for febrile seizures during the first to second week after dose 1 MMRV vaccine among children aged 12 to 23 months, compared with the MMR and varicella vaccines. In light of this information, the ACIP removed the preference for use of MMRV vaccine over separate administration of MMR and varicella vaccines at this February meeting. Shortly after this meeting, a working group formed to closely review the vaccine safety data and develop evidence-based policy options for the ACIP to consider in the future. This review went on for a little over a year, and in June 2009, the ACIP heard information about the vaccine safety data review. This table was presented to the ACIP in June 2009, summarizing the data from the Vaccine Safety Data Link study and the Merck-sponsored study. I'd like to take a moment and acknowledge Dr. Nikki Klein and the VSD for their very comprehensive contributions to this review, and Dr. Steve Jacobson and the Merck study team for providing data from the Merck-sponsored study. The data are summarized on the slide for your review, but the key point is that both studies showed an increased risk for febrile seizures after the MMRV vaccine in children aged 12 to 23 months receiving their first dose compared with MMRV vaccine. And this risk occurred in the time window of either 7 to 10 or 5 to 12 days after vaccination, and the magnitude of this risk was about twofold. So the risk of febrile seizures after MMRV vaccine was about two times higher than after the MMR and varicella vaccines administered separately. The working group comprehensively reviewed data from multiple evidence lines, including the data you saw on the table, but also other data, and came up with conclusions about the safety with respect to febrile seizures for dose 1 MMRV vaccine and dose 2 MMRV vaccine. For dose 1 MMRV vaccine among children aged 12 to 23 months, the working group concluded that the data supported a causal association between MMRV vaccine and febrile seizures. And about one additional febrile seizure is expected to occur during the 5 to 12 days after vaccination per approximately 2,300 to 2,600 children vaccinated with dose 1 MMRV vaccine compared with dose 1 MMR vaccine and varicella vaccines administered separately. The working group also conducted a thorough review of the dose 2 data information, although less information was available. And again, I'd like to especially acknowledge that the VSD data was particularly useful for this assessment. After reviewing the dose 2 data in children aged 4 to 6 years, the working group concluded that those who received dose 2 MMRV vaccine do not appear to have an increased risk for febrile seizures after vaccination compared with those who receive MMR vaccine and varicella vaccines at the same visit. The data that I just showed you was an important component of the evidence review to develop vaccine recommendations for MMRV, and we appreciated the opportunity to synthesize the safety data to help inform policy. Dr. Marin will now describe some more details about the ACIP recommendations for MMRV and their development. Thank you.
So on the second part of this update, we will present the recommendations for use of MMRV vaccine. And the outline of this second part is presenting the recommendations first, and I'm going to guide you through other elements besides safety that were assessed by the working group and the ACIP, elements grouped in what we called a framework, and then briefly I'm going to describe each element of the framework and the assessment of the working group. And in the end, we have additional resources from which you can get additional information regarding MMRV vaccine and recommendations. So these recommendations were approved by the ACIP in June 2009, and they are separate recommendations for the first and second dose. For the first dose, at 12 to 47 months of age, For measles, mumps, rubella, and varicella vaccines, either MMR vaccine and varicella vaccine or MMRV vaccine may be used. As you notice, there is no preference for either of the vaccination options. The recommendation also includes that providers who are considering administering MMRV vaccine should discuss the benefits and risks of both vaccination options with the parents or caregivers. Unless the parent or caregiver expresses a preference for MMRV vaccine, for the first dose in this age group, MMR vaccine and varicella vaccine as separate injections should be administered. The recommendation also has some guidance regarding the discussion with the parent that should be centered on helping them understand the risk-benefit trade-off. And this refers to compared with use of MMR vaccine and varicella vaccine at the same visit, use of MMRV vaccine results in one fewer injection, but is associated with a higher risk for fever and febrile seizures 5 to 12 days after the first dose among children aged 12 to 23 months. And this increased risk is about one additional febrile seizure for every 2,300 to 2,600 doses MMRV administered instead of MMR plus V. And that use of MMR vaccine and varicella vaccine avoids this increased risk for febrile seizures after MMRV vaccine. For the second dose, at any age, which would be from 15 months to 12 years of age, and for the first dose at ages older than 48 months, for measles, mumps, rubella, and varicella vaccines, use of MMRV vaccine is generally preferred over separate injections of its equivalent component vaccines. Consideration, you see that word generally preferred, and qualifiers for this general is considerations should include provider assessment, patient preference, and the potential for adverse events. As maybe you are aware, this new recommendation of generally preferred of combination vaccines, of MMRV as a combination vaccine, is consistent with the new ACIP recommendations on use of combination vaccines that was approved in June 2009 also. It should be noted that the routinely recommended ages for measles, mumps, rubella, and varicella vaccination continue to be 12 to 15 months for dose one and 4 to 6 years for dose two. As you saw on the recommendation for the first dose, we included 12 to 47 months. This 47 months cutoff, it's in the explanation, it's in the footnote, was chosen on the basis of the epidemiology of febrile seizures of Dr. Broder presented. Febrile seizures are rare after 4 years of age. So the ACIP, the working group and the ACIP data were available for children 12 to 23 months, but it is likely that this increased risk is present during the period of vulnerability for febrile seizures, which is up to 47 months. But the first dose is recommended routinely at 12 to 15 months. What elements were considered by the ACIP in making these recommendations? Vaccine safety was one of the main elements. Then ACIP looked at efficacy, effectiveness, and immunogenicity. Then at influence of each vaccination options of on burden of disease to prevent. We had extensive discussions regarding program implementation, equity in access to vaccines, and use of public funds, and a social context of current vaccinations. And I'll go briefly over the assessment of these elements for the two doses. This is the safety conclusions. I won't go over it. It's included for the completeness of presentation. It's similar, it's identical with what Dr. Broder presented. In terms of efficacy, effectiveness, and immunogenicity, MMRV vaccine was licensed on the basis of non-inferior immunogenicity of the antigenic components compared with simultaneous administration of MMR and varicella vaccine. Therefore, the assessment was that immunogenicity was equal, the effectiveness was assumed as equal, and that both vaccination options, which is MMRV or MMR plus V, are considered to provide the same protection against the four diseases. In terms of burden of disease to prevent, the current levels in the US are either eliminated for measles and rubella or very low for mumps and low for varicella. These current levels are due to high vaccine coverage among 19 to 35 month olds. Levels of MMR coverage have been 93% since 1996, and for varicella we achieved 91% in 2008. Therefore, this disease reduction and coverage levels were achieved in the absence of MMRV, when MMR and V were available. Therefore, MMRV vaccine as a first dose likely would have a similar impact to that of MMR and varicella for prevention of measles, mumps, rubella, and varicella. In terms of program implementation, I provided a little more details because there are elements that you face daily. We looked at storage conditions. There are differences. MMR should be stored in the refrigerator. MMRV, as varicella vaccine, should be stored frozen. Then the working group and the ACIP consider the number of injections, and according to the current schedule, there are 9 to 10 vaccinations recommended either routinely at 12 to 15 months or for ages that overlap 12 to 15 months. And there is literature showing parent and provider preference for fewer injections at a visit. In terms of how MMR and varicella are administered, data from immunization information systems show the majority of children receiving dose 1 MMR and varicella vaccine at 12 months, and that combination vaccines can have a potential impact and a potential benefit in the overall coverage and timeliness, but the literature is very limited to show a clear benefit. We also wanted to know what the main actors think about using MMRV or MMR and varicella vaccine. Therefore, CDC sponsored two surveys, one among parents, which was mothers, in fact. There were focus groups with mothers in two cities. There were about 82 mothers who participated. Mothers expressed questions and concerns regarding safety of vaccines, and specifically being asked whether MMRV were recommended by their physician. 41% said that they would accept it, and 31% said they would refuse it. So they would prefer MMR plus V. The second survey was conducted among physicians by our colleagues from University of Colorado, and studies found good uptake when MMRV was available. Physician interviews reported no difference in experience using MMRV compared with MMR. And regarding intended use of MMRV, this study was done when MMRV was not available. But given the post-licensure data, 9% of family physicians and 21% of pediatricians said they would definitely give MMRV to a healthy 12 to 15 month old, and about one-fifth to a quarter would let parents decide. Merck also did a study looking at intentions for use of MMRV, and they found that about half of prior users and one-fifth of non-users, non-prior users, expect their parents, their patients, to receive dose 1 as MMRV. Therefore, compiling all this information, the working group and ACIP concluded that there is insufficient evidence to express a benefit for one vaccination options from program implementation point of view. MMRV potentially can have a favorable impact on the on-time administration of other vaccines, being one fewer injection. However, for some parents and providers, the benefit of the reduced number of injections is outweighed by the increase in febrile seizure rate after MMRV. In terms of equity to in access to vaccines and use of public funds, the price of the vaccines per dose is similar. MMRV and varicella vaccine must be stores frozen, so there shouldn't be a difference in availability due to storage requirements. Providers would need to have a freezer for the varicella vaccine. There are ACIP recommendations for all three vaccines, MMR, MMRV, varicella vaccine, and also vaccines for children resolution, so they should be covered similarly by federal funds or by insurance company. So there is no difference in access to vaccines or in use to public funds. Something different that we did for this working group to look at the social context, we had an ethics consultancy, and the main question was whether the increased protection, it was assumed that with MMRV you'll have better compliance or increased protection, but does that increased protection for the population in general offset the increased risk for the individual? And the ethicists considered the ethical principles of risk-benefit analysis, parental and provider preferences, justice and fairness, and they recommended an approach that makes the option with the fewest adverse events the default. Therefore, they recommended favoring a preference for MMR and varicella vaccine as separate injections for the first dose, but choice to use MMRV vaccine if the physician and parents decide that's the best option. Then I'll go briefly over what we consider for the second dose, and I'll present only elements that are different in assessment from the first dose. This is the conclusion from Dr. Broder. The data on safety do not show an increased risk for febrile seizure after MMRV after the second dose. In terms of burden of disease to prevent, we thought, the working group, the ACIP thought, MMRV would have a similar impact on measles, mumps, rubella. However, because varicella second dose is a newer recommendation approved in 2006 compared with 89 for MMR, and because only half of the states have currently school entry requirements for two doses of varicella vaccine, the assessment was that potentially, as a second dose, MMRV would be more beneficial for varicella, at least until all states implement school entry requirements. For program implementation, there are fewer vaccines recommended for 4 to 6 years, but there are anecdotal reports that it is more difficult to give multiple vaccines to a 4 to 6 year old than to a 12 to 15 month old, so kind of compensates. In terms of physician opinions, a higher percent of physicians would be confident giving MMRV in this age group. About 20% of family physicians and 40% of pediatricians would definitely give MMRV, and kind of similar proportion as for the first dose would let parents decide. A Merck study also found higher rates of expected use of MMRV vaccine among both prior users and non-prior users of MMRV. Therefore, for the second dose, it is likely that the vaccination against measles, mumps, rubella, and varicella is preferred as one injection instead of two by both parents and providers, and the potential benefit of MMRV would be a more rapid increase in coverage for those two for varicella. Therefore, MMRV would be more beneficial than MMR plus V in this age group. And This summarizes data for the second dose. I won't go over, the two options are equal, and then what we just discussed briefly, the benefits of MMRV. That's why it's preferred for the second dose. Additional resources that have been developed. CDC has developed materials to help with the implementation of the new recommendation. As you see, for the first dose, the recommendation introduces the notion of discussion between parents and providers and choosing one vaccination option. So we developed some materials. There are two sets of materials, one for providers, one for parents, and within each category there are Q&As and also a fact sheet that presents clearly the trade-off, the risks and benefits with each vaccination option. A new vaccine information statement for MMRV has been developed, and it's currently in CDC clearance, would be available on the website, and we are also working on the publication of the MMWR with the ACIP statement that would make these recommendations official, and the statement is scheduled for electronic release in the next week or two or three weeks, and print by mid-May. That's what we had regarding update on MMRV vaccine. And Angela?
Thank you very much, presenters. And now I would like to open the panel for questions and answers, please.
Hi, good presentation all the way around. My question is to the first presenters. I work for a local health department in Maryland, and this we go through this every time there's an adverse event, discussions about what is on the viz as an adverse event versus reporting to VAERS, something that is maybe a more serious adverse event that's already listed on the VIS. Is there like, if it's on the viz as an adverse, a possible adverse event, is it reportable to VAERS?
Thank you so much for your question. I think you're asking about whether if it's already a known adverse event and you see it either on the package insert or something, if it should be reported to VAERS. Yes, anything that is of clinical concern or of interest to you should be reported to VAERS. We can monitor increases or decreases, and we take a look at known vaccine adverse events that are known to occur and look at those. There's also interesting research questions that some of our scientists have, and so being able to identify which patients are maybe experiencing those things helps us with our research. So thank you very much for your question.
Hi, I'm Mary Conant from Massachusetts, and one of the issues that came up this year with H1N1 is some of the medical errors that were happening with the vaccine. We had one nurse administer insulin instead of administering the H1N1 vaccine. Others were the seasonal vaccine given instead of the H1N1 vaccine. We've promoted the use of the Institute of Safe Medication Practices and reporting events there. But the question that comes up is, do we dual report? By that I mean report to the Institute of Safe Medication Practices and then report to VAERS when such events occur.
Thank you so much, and we've heard a lot of people asking us about, and I know this came up in Bill Atkinson's session too, about reporting vaccination errors. And if you go back to what the definition is for what VAERS is interested in, it's a health effect following a vaccination. Now, vaccination errors may have a health effect, but oftentimes, and the majority of the reports we see do not have a specific health effect that is following the error. However, VAERS accepts all reports, and we are receiving over 2,000 reports currently a year that are describing vaccination errors. And so we're very interested in looking at this and providing some kind of guidance about, more specifically about vaccination errors. But currently the system is accepting all reports to it. Probably a drawback compared to the Institute of Safe Medicine Practices form is that their form does ask specific details about how the error occurred. And so there's in our vaccine adverse event reporting system form focuses more on the health event versus how the vaccination occurred. But there's another side to it, too. The Institute of Safe Medicine Practices is not a national system. Healthcare providers are not as familiar with it. And so that's why we are also interested in VAERS and looking at, you know, potentially, you know, looking at those kinds of reports. However, it doesn't currently identically fit with the definition we have. But again, VAERS accepts all reports. If you send it to us, we'll have it in the system. And yes, we are looking at those error reports then. Thank you.
Good morning. Janice Collins from the Virgin Islands. Concerning the H1N1 vaccine, since the doses administered were being reported, was that used as your denominator or doses distributed?
So the VAERS system is not set up to look at the denominator data. We look at the numerator data. We look at the VAERS reports, and we see if there's an adverse event that's occurring more frequently with a particular vaccine in the VAERS reports for that vaccine than with other vaccines. There are some studies going on where we will be looking at reporting rates using, we've done it using doses distributed because that's been available, but as the doses administered data become available, we can report out reporting rates using that data for the H1N1 and seasonal influenza vaccine. And so that kind of information will be shared in the coming weeks or months.
Hi, I'm Kendra from DC. I was wondering, you said about the MMRV, the VIS and everything were gonna be available in May. What about the product itself? Is it already available or through VFC or any of those?
To our information, the vaccine will be available in early May, and the grantees already received, will be available through private offices, and the grantees already received an email from CDC that it would be available to be for ordering through VFC as well. Be kind of the second week of May.
Hello, Cynthia Williams, Virginia. My question goes back to the first question, because I don't quite understand the clinically significant symptoms. Are we reporting everything? Because if we're not reporting the milder symptoms, how do you get the stats for the other thing? Are we reporting just everything, or are we just reporting the severe reactions? I'm not clear on that.
Yes, I know that if you go back to the definition, and the definition is specifically not specific as far as guidance.
Yeah, it's not specific.
And there's a good reason for that, though, because if this surveillance system, the strength of it is that if we can encourage all reports, we can detect these rare associations. So people who may not think that a report is either related or it's not, you know, whatever. We just want to hear about it all because we know that we're going to get a certain number of reports that aren't going to be related to vaccine or may not be something we're interested in. But we do, if we get all reports of everything, anything that you believe is something of concern or clinically significant or whatever, reports to VAERS, then we can take a look for clustering or groups, and then that can be a signal to us. And so it's specifically not specific so that we can look at everything.
So when you say something of concern, I'm not concerned about the mild side effects because it's already listed there.
Yeah, and that's so, right. But you know, we've used VAERS to look at increases in known side effects.
Right.
That, you know, maybe there's something going on. Like a few years ago, we had an issue with, we'd heard actually from a clinician about nursing home patients reacting to tetanus vaccine. And, you know, certainly everyone knows you can get, you know, reactions from tetanus vaccine, but it was very helpful that we had reports in there where we could actually look at that age group, you know, specifically look at that. So when the questions come up, from either healthcare providers or our scientists or people looking at the data, if we have the data in the VAERS system, it can help to answer the question, or it can help to stimulate another little research study that can try to look at that. That's why all the reports really are very important to us.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we can take one last question. Thank you.
And this isn't actually a question, it's just kind of adding on to the conversation. One of the things that I found is that I myself only report those things that I don't expect to happen, but I found that parents are using VAERS almost in reverse, saying, well, you know, I looked up HPV and there's, you know, 29,000 reports, therefore it's bad, because one, we use terminology in there that makes perfectly great sense to us. We know what syncope is and everything else, but the parents don't always understand those words. And so, and we don't go through and clarify going, yeah, we don't think this is associated with it at all. So as a parent looks it up, they're using this as a tool to say, I don't want to vaccinate my children because look at all of these reports associated with one vaccine. And if we continue to put the things in that we expect to happen, I think it's going to, again, it's just going to pile on, and now those reports, instead of being, you know, 29,000, I'm just using that number, it'll be 56,000, and the parents will be even more apprehensive in getting the vaccines.
I think that, and I understand what your point about, you know, parents taking the information. One of the things we really like to caution, and maybe in all of your roles as working with the public, and I know that sometimes it can be very challenging, but reemphasizing VAERS data itself is not a good source of vaccine information. As you know, there are coincidental events that are reported to VAERS, and when we receive reports, there isn't someone who sits there and looks at the report and says, is this related to vaccination or not? We accept everything. And some people have a hard time understanding, but it really is helpful the way the system works. It doesn't matter whether or not it's related, because when you look at the data set as a whole, the stuff that's not related, when we compare it to background rates or other vaccines, it falls out, and you can see that. But in regards to communication with parents, reemphasizing, you know, what things are saying, because when we do our research studies in VAERS, they need to be confirmed through other research that's done through the vaccine safety data link, or maybe done by an independent researcher, and then that information is discussed at advisory committee meetings, the Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices, and then the package insert that the drug manufacturers have are directed to update their side effects. The vaccine information statement is updated to reflect that known but new vaccine side effect that may have been identified from all of these different studies that have been done, and also the Advisory Committee for Immunizations statements. And so redirecting parents as to what the credible sources of information are, I think, is very helpful. And the WONDER database is the vaccine adverse event data itself by itself is not, you know, not something that they should be directed to.
Thank you.